It's not in the earphone.
Okay, so let me just play a song.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Community News, covering the towns of Shrewsbury, Westboro, Northboro, and Southboro. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we'll be bringing you news from the latest edition of the Community Advocate, mysouthboro.com, and the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. This is Mike Gregory, today reading with John Riccio, and we're coming to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And now to begin the program, here is John with news and events from Westboro.
Thank you, Mike. Nelson Ball is Westboro's oldest veteran. As citizens throughout the U.S. observed Memorial Day, residents in Westboro also honored and acknowledged the veterans who remain in town, all 503 of them. Veterans make up about 2.3% of the population in Westboro. Surrounding communities have similar proportions of veterans. There are about 1,038 veterans in Shrewsbury, 660 in Grafton, and 487 in Northborough. According to voter registration data from 2024, of the 503 veterans in Westborough, one stands out, Nelson Ball. At age 96, Ball is the oldest veteran in town. Anticipating getting drafted into the military in the 1950s, Ball chose to enlist in the U.S. Army to ensure he could choose which branch and role he would be in. From 1954 to 1957, he was deployed to Korea and served as a counterintelligence agent. After basic training, he spent over 1,400 hours learning Korean, which he still speaks today. While in Korea, he served as an interpreter. In addition to his military duties, Ball also taught English to several young women. He shared how, because he spoke Korean, he dressed as Santa for the children at an orphanage during Christmas time. I was very proud to do it, Ball said of his service. I thought it was my responsibility to serve. Frankly, I think everybody should serve a short term. We'd be in a lot better world if they did. Originally from New Jersey, Ball moved to Westboro in 1961. He continues to run his business, Ball Financial Services, which he started out of his basement in 1965. He is also involved in the town's American Legion. Ball has made several significant contributions to Westboro, including founding the Rotary Club. He is also known as the father of pickleball, after footing the bill to have four courts constructed along Lake Chauncey. Although Ball is the oldest veteran in town, approximately 77.5% of the veteran population is over the age of 60, with 107 individuals over the age of 85. The average veteran's age is 72, while the youngest veteran is 23. Of the town's veterans, 26 are female. The Veterans Advisory Board has been using this data to connect these residents with local organizations and resources. The board honored those who gave everything during the Westboro Memorial Day Parade. The Grand Marshal was U.S. Army veteran and Mill Pond School principal Peter Gwelnitz. The schedule was St. Luke's Cemetery observance, 10 a.m., buses to Pine Grove Cemetery, 10:20 a.m., Pine Grove Cemetery observance, 10:25 a.m., parade from Baxter Street to Forbes Municipal Building, 10:40 a.m., parade at Forbes Memorials, 11 a.m. Refreshments were provided by the VFW Post 9013 at 11:45 a.m. Church that could draw thousands targets Westboro parcel. A sizable Christian church is looking to come to Westboro. Three parcels totaling 28 combined acres were sold for $14.175 million to Connect United Incorporated in January, according to records from the Worcester Registry of Deeds. The currently forested parcels within Westboro Office Park, which sit adjacent to Route 9 and Interstate 495, may be the new location for Connect Church's new broadcast center. For years, Connect Church has broadcast from its Ashland location, with congregation members also meeting at its second location in Framingham, purchased in 2021, to view the sermons of second-generation pastor Derek Fry and his clergy. But as the church has continued to grow, the Ashland site is said to be bursting at the seams, with approximately 1,200 attendees across three Sunday services. Fry says it's time to expand, hoping to regionalize the church. Purchasing the right land was a battle, Fry told the community advocate. The building is still being designed, but the church is expected to be about 80,000 square feet. The plan is to see construction start within the next 3 years. However, that will be dependent on the church's ability to raise capital and build financing for a facility at that scale. I'm going to be doing everything I can to get in there as fast as possible, just because. We could fill it right now, Fry said, noting his church has used every nook and cranny of space to try to serve the community well. That's our heart. A local pastor, a local church, investing in the community, strengthening families, building something meaningful long term, he continued. Fry does not want to pressure his community for money to construct the new building, so the idea is to include some businesses in addition to the very large auditorium space anticipated to fit 1,000 to 1,200 people. Though he's currently unsure what those businesses might be, Fry said many in his congregation have young families, and he's seen great success with serving youth. The church operates two schools, a thriving youth ministry, and what it calls Jesus clubs in six different school systems. Additionally, Fry says he's a health and fitness guy who believes strong bodies produce strong minds, so he's considering ideas that may align with that. Fry said the space in Westboro will give his church the ability to reach more people. He anticipates reaching 3,000 people on day one. He plans to survey the area and get a sense of what people want and need in Westboro and the surrounding towns. With his church in a healthy place, Fry, 58, said it would be easier to just coast, but he feels he has a responsibility to reach more people. Connect the disconnected and help them establish a relationship with God. It's not about me, it's about him, Fry said. Fry's sermons focus on modern topics, including the anxieties of everyday life, parenting, and managing technology. Our message is sacred, but our methods are very, very modern and relevant, he said. Fry added, "We're going to be a church that builds bridges, not barriers and walls. And I hope that they come to see that we're going to be adding value. We're not takers, we're givers, and we're going to sow a lot of good seed into the town of Westboro in the very near future." Difficulty connecting with church is something Fry knows all too well, having dealt with the same conflict himself growing up. Fry's father, Ernie Fry, started Connect Church 40 years ago, under a different name, holding its very first sermon at Fayville Hall in Southboro in 1979. His father was a broken man, Fry said, who saw religion as a crutch for weak people. But on his quest to deny faith, he found it himself. Before his very eyes, Fry saw his father transform from abusive to peaceful. While in high school, Fry says he had his very own come-to-Jesus moment. He had been living a double life. As a preacher's son, he played the role of Christian. But when it came to school and friends, he was ashamed of his faith and denied it. But the incongruence was tearing him apart. Being fake was exhausting. So he decided he was done denying his faith. "Since then, I have never been the same," he said. He's been a committed follower of Christ. He's had some bumps and bruises in his faith, he admits, but church is for imperfect people. Now, Fry has been serving as a pastor for 30 years. Most of his family is involved in the church, with one daughter, Morgan Fry Martinez, serving as director of worship experience. His wife, Stacy, is a full-time pastor who is also principal at one of the church's schools, and his son, Devon, is ready to take the leadership reins. "We kind of feel like that's our responsibility. We have to reach more people. It's not about just being the biggest and the best," Fry said. "We just think that healthy things grow, and so we are growing, and we just need a location where we can serve more people better." Fifty-seven-year-old man charged with aggravated rape. A 57-year-old man is accused of repeatedly raping a 12-year-old after over 20,000 text messages were found between the two individuals. On February 20th, a Westboro detective was notified that a 12-year-old girl had potentially been the victim of sexual assault. An investigation through the Worcester County District Attorney's Office started, and the girl's mother was granted an emergency restraining order on her behalf. According to police reports that chronicled the investigation, Scott Dickman, 57, allegedly exchanged 20,718 instant messages with the girl. Approximately 459 messages reportedly contained multimedia elements, and there were 25 calls recovered. The text messages allegedly reveal that Dickman had sexual conduct with the girl, detailing several instances of alleged assault. Police documents reported he asked the girl to delete text messages 20 times with "I love you, T texted 576 times. The alleged assault was hidden from the 12-year-old's parents. Dickman is being charged with 10 counts of indecent assault and battery of an individual under the age of 14, 5 counts of aggravated statutory rape, and a single count of intimidation of a witness. On May 6th, Dickman was arraigned and pleaded not guilty. His bail was set at $50,000 cash, and he was sentenced to the Worcester County House of Correction. Later, the defendant's motion for ex parte approval of funds was allowed. And that ends our Westboro segment of the program today. After the first public service announcement, Mike will return with all you need to know from Shrewsbury.
Are you having difficulty with your eyesight? Are you losing your vision? Are you afraid of what comes next? If you're blind or visually impaired, contact Mass Commission for the Blind to find out if you're eligible to register for services. Learn new skills to reclaim your independence. Call 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Community News, a production of Audio Journal. The time is approximately 4:16, and now news and events from Shrewsbury. At 100, Barbara Dunne remains a Shrewsbury great. Her impact can be felt when a rowing shell crosses Lake Quinsigamond. The Shrewsbury Fire Department rescues a resident. A sale is made in Maple and Maine, and St. John's students walk between classes. Her name is synonymous with charity. Her love for Shrewsbury is unmistakable. On May 17th, Barbara Babs Dunne turned 100 years old. Her life, and the life of her husband, James Jim Dunne, who died in 2003, is characterized by generosity, philanthropy, and a simple principle. To save a life or change a life, she said. The daughter of George and Helen Grant, Barbara was born in Athol. She worked at the Thistle Inn, where a steak dinner cost patrons $1.50. before graduating from Athol High School in 1943. She graduated from Becker College the following year. In 1945, Dunne was reading the Worcester Telegram when she came across a piece about a young Shrewsbury ensign's experience in the U.S. Navy during wartime. The 23-year-old man had written home to assure his parents he was safe after a typhoon in the Pacific Ocean, and his picture was prominently displayed in the Worcester Telegram reporting. Dunne read the poem twice. There was no mention of a wife of the sailor. Boy, would I like to meet someone like him, she remembers telling her neighbor. Her neighbor wasn't so hopeful. Don't eat your heart out, she replied. But some things are just meant to be. Around that time, she took a secretarial job, and her boss, totally by coincidence, was the Shrewsbury sailor's father. In May 1946, Babs and Jim finally met. They were engaged 2 weeks later, and married by September. Through the Irving James Jr. Fund, the Dunne family endeavored to make an impact on Shrewsbury and surrounding communities. Jim and Babs donated close to $1 million to construct the Dunne Rowing Center along North Quinsigamond Avenue, a tribute to Jim's time as a rower at Shrewsbury High School and WPI. The couple later donated another $700,000 to build an addition, making it the largest rowing facility in the country when it opened in 2002. You row backwards. You can't see where you're going, Dunne told the community advocate. In rowing, everything is done in unison together. Everything is done at the same time. Otherwise, you're in trouble. After Jim's death, Dunne made a flurry of philanthropic donations in memory of her husband. The Dancing Fountains in Dean Park was dedicated in 2004. Jim always loved the fountains, Dunne said, and the dancers were choreographed to some of the couple's favorite songs. During Jim's last few months of life, he saw a mysterious woman who he called his guardian angel in the corner of his hospital room, though nobody else seemed to notice her presence. On the day of Jim's death, Dunne remembers seeing a woman matching her description enter the room. "There really are angels," she later said. "I've seen them, touched them, and spoken to them." In memory of that angel, Dunne in 2005 erected a bronze guardian angel statue in her front yard. In September 2016, the angel was moved to St. John's High School, where it was blessed for the Feast of the Guardian Angels. In recognition of all the generosity, the Donahue family was awarded the Harry S. Cutting Award by Shrewsbury Youth and Family Services. Donahue's legacy also includes a $400,000 donation to WPI Athletics, a gift to the Shrewsbury Fire Department for a hovercraft and various safety equipment, a gift to Shrewsbury's Rise program, Maine and Maple, a donation to rowing shells to Shrewsbury High School, WPI, and a shell for St. John's named Dare to Dream, a reference to Jim's motto, Dare to Dream and Make Those Dreams Come True. Thanks to 100 years, Babs and the rest of the Donahue family, more people are able to reach those dreams. I just keep busy doing things I really enjoy, said Babs Donahue. Sawyer called exemplary during his final performance review. Dr. Joe Sawyer, set to retire from his role at Shrewsbury's Superintendent of Schools in June, received his final performance review from the school committee on April 29th. Sawyer has led the district since 2009. Overall, Sawyer's performance last year was rated as exemplary. Dr. Sawyer's overall performance has been exemplary, and the school committee agrees that our district has been incredibly fortunate to have his leadership over such a long and impactful tenure. Dr. Sawyer has consistently demonstrated what it means to be a professional, data-informed superintendent. What stands out most is his ability to balance high-quality education outcomes with strong financial stewardship, said School Committee Chair Aaron Boucher, reading a composite review of Sawyer's performance. The evaluation examined several different areas, including Sawyer's communication, engagement, achievement regarding predetermined goals, and how effectively he was passing the torch to the next superintendent, Dr. Tiffany Ostrander. Dr. Sawyer leads by example and does not expect more of others than he does of himself. His number one concern is student learning and ensuring that all students receive the services they need to be successful, Boucher read. She added, over Dr. Sawyer's long tenure, his family and community engagement has been the defining aspect of his leadership. He has built trust with families, staff, and the broader community through consistent messaging, visibility, and a steady, respectful approach. Sawyer said he was proud of the work he's accomplished, thanking his family and the staff. I really can't take credit for all the incredible work our staff has done to advance things. I've always been incredibly proud of the quality and commitment of our staff. I'm particularly indebted to the leadership of our leadership team. The school committee also touched on what had taken place over the last year. There was some positive feedback, including a review of Sawyer's communication immediately following a fatal shooting near the Coolidge campus in August, and some discussion of criticism he had received. Namely, Sawyer received his first formal complaint of his career. The school committee addressed the complaint, filed because Sawyer's department was late in answering a number of public records requests. The committee said it had been working with Sawyer and the school department to ensure that in the future, those demands were able to be met. Officials said over 30 multi-step requests were submitted, some within days of each other, leading the school department spending 120 hours compiling thousands of documents. Excuse me. I firmly believe the family's right to put in public request records and expect timely responses. When you look at the number of requests, the parts within each request, we tried to manage them as best we could. The district did not respond as timely as we should and have taken them all, said school committee member Sandra Fritch. And more news from the school committee. Shrewsbury teachers no longer need COVID-19 vaccine. The Shrewsbury School Committee on April 29th voted unanimously to repeal policy number 394, a 2021-era policy that required all staff to demonstrate they have received full COVID-19 vaccination and remain full vaccination as a condition of employment. The policy reads, vaccination is one of the leading prevention strategies to end the pandemic, prevent hospitalizations and severe disease, and keep members of the school community as safe as possible while preventing absences that compromise the delivery of instruction and support for students and stretch the staff. The policy was implemented in October 2021 and was set to be revisited after 5 years. Over the course of the past years, the impact of COVID-19 and the level of risk has moderated greatly. Matching its approach to flu prevention, the district has encouraged employees to update their vaccinations annually and provides free opportunities to receive flu and COVID-19 vaccines at work, said school committee member Chair Erin Boucher. I think this is kind of a housekeeping item, and I'm glad we addressed it. Keep the town beautiful and thriving. Shrewsbury Garden Club's plant sale is a perennial hit. On May 16th, the Shrewsbury Senior Center parking lot was awash in colors. With hundreds of plants displayed on about a dozen tables, residents roamed a selection of red, purple, and yellow flowers, with a variety of other available options. But the most notable color that morning was green, and that's not accounting for all the leaves, stems, and herbs around the flowers. Members of the Shrewsbury Garden Club, those who have been members at least for a year, were roaming around in custom-made green aprons, excited to help their neighbors pick out the perfect plant. This is the magic behind the Shrewsbury Plant Sale, an annual tradition hosted by the Garden Club. After two consecutive years of rain, this year's weather finally matched the energy and enthusiasm of the Garden Club members. This is our way to beautify, and while some are here, we educate, said Garden Club co-president Barbara Droge. There's every type of gardener. Some gardens in containers, some do vegetables, some just do herbs. I look at plants and ask if I can divide that in a couple of years. Founded in 1957, the Garden Club started with 14 women meeting at someone's house. Since that point, the club has rejuvenated parts of Shrewsbury, created new garden installations, and awarded thousands of dollars in scholarship money. If you're a Shrewsbury resident, chances are you've passed through the intersection of Main and Maple Avenue. The intersection's island is thoughtfully maintained and beautified by the Garden Club, a difficult but incredibly rewarding pursuit. It's our best advertisement. It makes people happy, said Droge. The first plant sale dates back to 1975. Plants are sourced from all over, including greenhouses, local gardeners, and wholesalers, that's for herbs, helping local residents kickstart on their gardening. Proceeds go back to the Garden Club. Garden Club members like Kerry Hawley wait for the plant sale every year. First of all, you have to love flowers and things that bloom and grow, she said. Spring is so short here, you have to be involved. We love to work, keep the town looking beautiful. We do what we need to keep the town beautiful and thriving. As the spring becomes summer, the Garden Club members were quick to offer advice about how to maintain the perfect garden. It takes a little bit of commitment, a lot of love, and an appreciation of the outdoors, members said. The first thing I did is I just got plants from other people. You know, they're hardy. You know, they grow easily. If they're separating their plants, they're growing quickly. That's where you start and you get more adventurous. Start with the easy stuff, said Droge. Added Holly, if you have a piece of land where you're going to be there for a while, maybe put in some perennials and see how they do. Annuals are beautiful for color, and you can keep them in containers or in the ground, and nature takes care of the rest. And we're going to close my session with a letter to the editor. My name is Graetha, and I'm an 8th grade student from Shrewsbury. I'm writing to share that I recently won the grand prize at a regional science fair out of 82 teams and was nominated to compete in the Thermo Fisher Scientific Junior Innovators Challenge 2026 for my project entitled Optimizing Biodegradable Composite Films for Sustainable Food Packaging. My accomplishments also include first place at the Massachusetts Middle School State Science Fair and the Clark University Challenge Convention Change the World Research Award. My project focuses on developing a biodegradable alternative to traditional plastic food packaging by combining natural polymers, eggshell, reinforcement, and enzyme assistance biodegradation. I tested the strength, flexibility, water resistance, and decomposition rate to balance the durability during use with faster environmental breakdown after disposal. I am proud to represent Shrewsbury in the science, technology, engineering, and math research and hope to continue pursuing engineering solutions that address environmental challenges such as plastic pollution and sustainable materials. I am sharing this achievement in hopes of encouraging other students in our community to explore science, engineering, technology, and medicine. Signed sincerely, Grahitha Sandeep, Town of Shrewsbury. We certainly recognize and congratulate her achievements. And with that, we'll close on news and events from Shrewsbury. And after the next public service announcement, John will be back to continue the program with news and events from Northborough.
Would you like to hear news from Fitchburg and Leominster that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Wednesday at 4 p.m.
And now here's John with news and events from Northborough.
Thank you, Mike. Zay School will get roof repairs after two overwhelming votes. The debate about the Marion E. Zay Elementary School roof is over. During the second night of town meeting on April 28th, Northborough voted overwhelmingly, 166-19, to appropriate approximately $3 million to recover the aging roof, putting it back into working order. In a subsequent vote at the ballot box, a debt exclusion for the roof passed by a 1,144-580 vote. Currently, the Zay School roof, which dates back to 1998, has several leaks, causing serious problems. Water is pooling, seams are failing, and flashing is being pulled away from the building. Assistant Superintendent of Operations Keith Lavoy attributed the roof's poor condition to stone ballasts that deteriorated quickly, especially since 2021. Whether it is an open ceiling tile or barrels collecting water, it's a distraction for students and places demands on staff to adjust their plans. This disruption to learning requires classes to be held in alternative locations, Lavoy told town meeting. The roof repair will cost approximately $5.58 million. However, the project is part of the Massachusetts School Building Authority's MSBA Accelerated Repair Program, which will reimburse 48.6% of the construction, meaning Northborough will pay about $3 million. It's been a long process. Northborough applied to the MSBA in 2021 and again in 2024. The town was invited into the program in 2025. With the MSBA ultimately approving the project scope in February of 2026, construction is expected to begin in summer of 2027. It's a high number, said former Select Board member Jacob Jones. Anyone who has ever done anything with roofs, you know it's a high number. I want to thank the school department for accommodating a tour. I agree. We need to do this project. Town meeting cracks down on tractor trailers parked on Bartlett Street. Fewer trucks parked on Bartlett Street? It's music to town meeting's ears. On April 29th, Northborough Town Meeting approved Article 48, greenlighting a commercial vehicle parking bylaw on Lyman Street and Bartlett Street. Currently, trucks heading to nearby facilities use the roads as makeshift parking areas if they arrive at their destination, typically the Amazon or FedEx warehouses, early. In March, Select Board members described it as a nuisance. It has become a rest area. The tractor-trailer trucks have carved out a spot to pull over, and at any given time of day, there are 6 to 8 trucks parked around Bartlett Street and Lyman Street, said Police Chief Brian Griffin. To push back against the trucks, fines will be increased from $50 to $100. For the first offense, then $300 for repeated offenses. Fines can be charged to the company, not to the driver, if needed, and Griffin said that his department will use context when determining whether to levy a fine. An 18-year-old who pulls over to fish at the nearby pond? Likely to receive a warning, said Griffin. The tractor-trailer driver new to Northboro, who stopped to get some shut-eye for 20 minutes before delivery? Likely to be granted leeway. Our goal is always to educate. We're not looking to make money here, said Griffin. Still, the proposal wasn't without skeptics. Residents like Cheryl Silverberg pushed back against the regulations, concerned that the article unfairly targeted people who work a difficult job. She said that it was unfair to penalize the drivers if there's no practical alternative. I understand not wanting them, but when I drive down there, they're off the road. You have a time limit. Where are you going to encourage the trucks to go? I just can't see penalizing people who are just doing their job, she said. Griffin countered, "We are mindful that this is someone's living." Canine officer detects 70 grams of fentanyl after Northboro traffic stop. At approximately 8:32 p.m. on May 10th, a Northboro detective observed a male driving a vehicle on Barefoot Road. The officer had reason to believe that the operator, later identified as Stephen Farrow, was in possession of narcotics. A traffic stop was made. Through an investigation, Jocko, a canine officer with the Hudson Police Department, conducted a sniff of the vehicle. Jocko allegedly showed areas of interest in the vehicle and, according to police documents, a subsequent search revealed two baggies with a large amount of a white rock-like substance. The substance was identified as crack cocaine, and Farrow was placed under arrest shortly thereafter. While taking inventory of the vehicle, the Northboro Police Department allegedly located other baggies that contained a purple powdery substance and a white rock-like substance. The purple powder was identified as fentanyl, according to court documents. Farrow also had approximately $881 in cash. The suspected crack cocaine weighed in at 69 grams, while the alleged fentanyl weighed in at 9 grams. Farrow faces several drug-related charges, including trafficking cocaine, over 36 grams, possessing a Class A drug with intent to distribute, and possessing to distribute a Class B drug. Northboro Colonial Fair to bring revolutionary era to life. Cannons will roar, colonial music will fill the air, and revolutionary war reenactors will take over Ellsworth McAfee Park when the Northboro Revolution 250 Committee hosts its upcoming colonial fair on May 30th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The rain date is May 31st. The committee hopes the event will become Northboro's signature Revolution 250 celebration, giving residents and visitors alike a chance to step directly into the sights, sounds, and stories of 1776. The goal is to help residents connect with the people and places that shaped Northboro's role in the American Revolution. The event is designed to be fun, an immersive day for families and history lovers alike. The committee wants people to experience what colonial life may have looked and felt like right here in Northboro. This date was selected because it was 250 years ago, on June 3, 1776, that the Northborough Selectmen voted to support independence. This was 1 month before the Declaration of Independence was signed in Philadelphia. The selectmen wrote, "If it be the mind of this town to be independent of Great Britain, in case the Continental Congress think proper, and we are ready with our lives and fortunes, if in Providence called to defend the same, passed in the affirmative." The fair will be an exciting day full of events, including cannon firing from several Revolutionary War artillery organizations, reenactors, colonial-era musicians, colonial and dancers, and singers. There will be demonstrations about artillery, colonial medical practices, and a few colonial-era games. The Northborough Rev 250 Committee, the Northborough Historical Society, and the local Daughters of the American Revolution will all have information booths. Local vendors will include timber crafts, design, Milltown Pottery, and Northbrook Alpaca Farm. Several food trucks will be available for your dining pleasure. Other plans for 2026 include historical society programs for 2026-27. Will feature themes like timber frame construction, September 25th, the Boston Massacre, October 23rd, and colonial clothing, January 22nd. All programs are free at the Northborough Historical Society building at 52 Main Street. The town will dedicate a new Revolutionary War Veterans Memorial near the Civil War Memorial, though the date has yet to be determined. Lawn signs and a self-guided brochure highlighting historic witness houses will return this spring. Witness houses are buildings that witnessed the Revolutionary War. Revolution 250 will only take place once, so make plans now to attend as many of these once-in-a-lifetime events as you can. More information is available at the Northborough Historical Society Revolution 250 website. Join the Northborough Senior Center Open House. Save the date, June 2nd, from 4 to 6 p.m., for this opportunity to explore all that happens at the Northborough Senior Center. Discover new activities, meet new people, and see how the Senior Center can support healthy and active aging. This event is for both newcomers and longtime Senior Center participants. Information will be available about upcoming programs, groups you can join, and the many valuable services and resources offered at the Senior Center. Learn what the Dull Men's Group is all about. View the work of crafters, painters, and quilters, and meet local writers and authors. These groups and activities will be featured throughout the event, with opportunities to talk with participants and learn more about getting involved. You can also gather information about services like van transportation and shine counseling for Medicare choices, as well as resources that support aging at home, programs that may help save on taxes, and other helpful community services. Senior Center staff and volunteers will be available to give tours and answer questions, and light refreshments will also be served. Come tour the building and enjoy a walk along the beautiful ADA-accessible trail. This is a perfect chance to stop by and learn about what the Senior Center offers in a relaxed setting. June is for strawberries and ice cream. That's at Tugas Family Farm. Fresh fruit, fresh air, family fun. Located at 234 Ball Street in Northborough. For information, call 508-393-6406. Plan on apple cider donuts, ice cream, children's playground, barnyard animals, picking information and hours. For that information, go to TugasFamilyFarm.com. And that ends our Northboro segment for today's program. After the next public service announcement, Mike will be back to finish up with the Southboro News.
Here on Audio Journal, we read many local community newspapers each week, including the Gardner News. You can hear the Gardner News every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Stay in touch with your community by tuning in to Audio Journal. The Gardner News, every Wednesday at 6 p.m.
And now we'll finish the program with news and events from Southboro. After 30 years, Clayton Ryan to retire from Finn Elementary School. In the 1980s, Clayton Ryan was finishing up college while working part-time for V66, a Boston television station. In his role, Ryan helped around the studios on Speen Street in Natick. He had dreams of being a television comedy writer, but his career went off script, something he's forever grateful for. After working in various industries, Ryan is now retiring after 3 decades working in child psychology and public education. He's a longtime principal of the Mary E. Finn Elementary School. Working with kids is probably the most rewarding part, to build a connection with a student, to help them when they're feeling sad, to build a sense of trust, and to let them know that an adult really cares. After his brief television career, Ryan started working at Wayside Community Programs, a human services agency. The work changed his career technology. I've got involved in that and found that it was much more rewarding, he told the community advocate. He then held a series of jobs in pediatric mental health. After 6 years as the student services coordinator at the Gifford School, a special education institution in Weston, Ryan felt drawn to public schools. By 1999, he was at Finn Elementary School. His time leading up to his principalship in 2017 was split between roles as a behavioral therapist and an assistant principal. During his time at Finn, Ryan utilized his experience in psychiatry. In 2005, he secured a 5-year grant from the Department of Education that focused on mental health advocacy. He conducted training and brought in special speakers and used the funds to help support awareness efforts. The impact was long-lasting. I was proud to be involved in it, he said. Ryan continues to be proud of the mindfulness initiatives that have been implemented at the Finn School, including encouraging staff and students to take, quote, a mindful moment throughout the day to minimize stress. Younger students don't have all the self-regulatory skills that older kids do, but yet they're able to start recognizing and start to build a foundation that will help them later in life. So I'm very proud of that work, said Ryan. After almost 30 years, Ryan's time at Finn is coming to an end. Although he is only with the children for 3 years of their life, he feels incredibly fulfilled when his former students return to Southboro. On occasion, they'll share their favorite memories, whether it was playing football or being part of his lunch bunch. They're the things that are nice, that you know you can make a lasting impact with families and students, he said. Ryan said he feels incredibly fortunate to have had the opportunity to work in Southboro. From Superintendent Greg Martineau to other superintendents I've had the opportunity to work with, along with such a supportive parent community, it's been a place that truly values education and collaboration. ...250 Boston Turnpike 40B development approved with conditions. The Zoning Board of Appeals issued its written decision approving the permit for a 40B housing development southwest of the corner of Route 9 and Parkerville Road. The project proposes 30 new townhouses behind the Beehive building in the contractor's yard. The ZBA's decision included several conditions to mitigate impact on the town and its abutters. The project is one of the 40Bs proposed by Southboro-based Ferris Development. The company will need to keep working with town officials to ensure they comply with the ZBA's decision and to address concerns raised by the public and other boards. To move forward the residential development project, Ferris will need to go through another hearing process with the planning board based on the changes to the commercial sections of the property. The 40B project consists of 28 two-bedroom units and 4 three-bedrooms. 8 of the units will be restricted as affordable housing. The development's only access will be a driveway through the commercial lot on Route 9. The project could help the town enter what they call a safe harbor status to protect it from future unwanted 40B projects. But for some project abutters, this may be a 40B that is unwanted. That may depend on whether or not they believe the conditions imposed by the ZBA's decision go far enough in addressing concerns they've raised during the hearings over the past few years. Those include concerns about stormwater drainage impact on the area given how wet the property is and visual screening for abutters. The ZBA's decision and conditions states the following. The board finds that the project will have an adverse impact on local services and infrastructure. However, such impacts will be mitigated through appropriate conditions when built in accordance with the plans and conditions imposed herein. The project will be consistent with local needs. Any unmitigated impacts posed by the project and will not outweigh the benefits provided by the project's affordable units. The board also finds that the applicant has worked in good faith to mitigate adverse impacts on the rest of the to the best of his ability. Any opponents of the project have until June 10th to file a timely appeal. Celebrate wellness and community champions. This week, the community is invited to celebrate wellness. As usual, the party wrapping up Mental Health Awareness Month will include an honorary reception for the annual Wellness Award. But instead of the naming the 8th recipient of the annual award for a community hero, the town will celebrate 8 new honorees this year. The free reception will be held Wednesday, May 27th, that's tomorrow, from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Community House, 28 Main Street. An updated flyer for the event asks the community to join Southborough Youth and Family Services in thanking these community champions, and they are Marjorie Caldwell, Food Pantry Volunteer, Lana Dungdale, Community Volunteer, Andrew Gleckel, Firefighter, Pat Draper, Community Volunteer, Marianne Sorensen, Librarian, Karen Amjun, Community Volunteer, Taylor West, the Health Director, and Trish Fruitman, School Nurse. I reached out to SYFS and they confirmed that this year the Youth Commission chose to honor all the community members instead of selecting one recipient for the Laurie Sugarman Whittier Wellness Award. The flyer encourages the community to share a reflection on any of the recipients. The link for that leads to a page where the public can share memories, anecdotes, reflections, photos, or videos celebrating this year's Celebrate Wellness honorees. It's worth highlighting that the celebration is about more than just the award. SYFS has been promoting the event as a community gathering focused on connection, reflection, and emotional well-being. Connection, reflection, and emotional well-being, this special event offers a chance to come together, celebrate our progress, and strengthen the bonds that support mental health. Algonquin Regional Students Group hosting annual MRF Challenge. This past Memorial Day, the Algonquin Student Group Operation Enduring Freedom was again an official host for the special workout fundraiser. The grueling Murph Challenge honors fallen heroes and raises funds for Lieutenant Michael P. Murphy Memorial Scholarship. The Algonquin Students Group has been supporting the annual fundraiser since 2019. Force Field Athletics began partnering with them and supported the event in 2022. Last year, Algonquin Regionals Operation Enduring Freedom Group provided specific details on Instagram about how the challenge works. Join us to honor our fallen heroes by sacrificing 1 hour for those who gave everything. The event focuses on remembrance, honoring, and community. The fundraiser is named after Michael Murphy, a Navy SEAL who was killed in action in Afghanistan in 2005 and posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor for his heroic actions. The annual workouts raise money for the foundation in Murphy's name. The foundation awards scholarships and support construction of the Navy SEAL Museum named in Murphy's honor. And Southborough Police Department Community News and Updates. the Southborough Police Department shared a feel-good story about a special staff mentorship. The feel-good story highlights that Southborough's police force now includes a father-son duo. This is hardly the first time it's been happening. Today marks a special moment in Southborough Police Department for the DeLuca family and our Southborough community. Sergeant Jim DeLuca and probationary police officer Joe DeLuca are working their first father-son shift together, sharing not only the same profession, but the same commitment to serving and protecting our town. From teaching life lessons at home to now standing side-by-side in uniform, full-circle moment is one they'll never forget. A proud example of dedication, family, and carrying on one generation to the next. Wishing them both a safe shift and many great memories going forward. And finally, the big band concert at the Senior Center. The Southborough Senior Center has asked me to help to get the word out about an event this week that the seniors can sign up to attend. The center is hosting a concert by the Trotier Middle School Big Band. The mid-afternoon event includes a selection of pizzas. There's a suggested donation of $3. The event will take place on Wednesday, the 27th. That's tomorrow. The event starts at 3:30 and the performance at 4 p.m. The center promotes Southborough's winning Trotier Band, led by director Jamie Clark, is an audition group only composed of 6th, 7th, and 8th graders from the Trotier Middle School. These amazing musicians love to play big band and jazz tunes. They repeatedly surpass expectations of anybody who hears them perform. And in closing, this community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Audio Information Network. If you'd like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, you can call the office at 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. Today, this is Mike Gregory reading with John Riccio. We're glad you were with us, and we hope to be with you next week.
This is Bird Note. Masonville Cove in South Baltimore is a special place to study birds. Once a dumping ground for sediment dredged from the harbor, the cove is now a popular urban wildlife refuge, says ecologist Sharon Dorsey.
And we have seen a return of wildlife, not just mammals, foxes, otters, but a lot of bird species.
Sharon is part of a licensed research team that's monitoring bird populations at the cove with a scientific catch-and-release technique called bird banding. Sharon weighs and measures the captured birds, then fits each with a uniquely numbered metal band.
It's like a bracelet that they'll wear for the rest of their lives.
That info is recorded in a global database. So if the banded bird is encountered at another station, researchers will know that it spent part of its life in Baltimore. And that's important
because not many stations are set up in urban environments. We are essentially trying to describe what birds are doing in these urban spaces. You don't think that they would thrive, but in fact, they find food and mates and other things for their survival.
Sharon says that over time, this data can reveal which species take refuge at Masonville Cove and how habitat restoration benefits urban birds. This is Blackbirders Week. To learn more, follow the hashtag Blackbirders Week on social media and visit birdnote.org. I'm Dara Miles Wilson.
What's your vision?
My vision's 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye and zero vision in the left eye.
20/200 at best on my left eye, and on my right eye, I cannot see.
No, I mean, what's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
My vision is employment opportunities for all, including people with disabilities.
My vision is for all of my students to dream big.
That he become fully independent.
For my patients to live their best lives.
What's your vision?
What's your vision?
What is your vision?
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, our vision is clear. We believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.